Good afternoon. It's 5:04, and this is All Things Considered on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source. I'm Mark Rumsey. The trial of CMPD officer Randall Carrick wrapped up today after more than 2 weeks of testimony. The prosecution and defense spent about 2.5 hours this morning making their final case to jurors about whether or not Carrick is guilty of voluntary manslaughter for the shooting of an unarmed black man, Jonathan Farrell, nearly 2 years ago. The jury started its deliberations at around 2:40 this afternoon. WFAE's Gwendolyn Glenn and Michael Tomczyk were at the courthouse. They join me in the studio now. We have heard a lot about what's termed excessive force since Carrick was initially charged in this case. Michael, what was the discussion of that topic today?
The prosecution finished with that idea. Prosecuting attorney Teresa Postel showed a photo of Officer Carrick's injuries, which amounted to a small cut and a bruise, from this whole encounter. And she pointed out that Carrick had training, he had other fighting options, and he had two officers with him. And then she showed jurors a photo of Jonathan Farrell, dead with 10 gunshots. She said that when you contrast the two, it is clearly excessive force. And you know, off of that, it's not at all to say that, as Gwen heard, the prosecution, they were not trying to say that he's a bad guy necessarily.
No, the prosecution is not. They said that it's a sad situation on both sides and that they don't want to try to paint him that way. And as Michael said, she said he had other options. He could have used his baton. He could have used a flashlight. He could have used spray. And that all of these things he was trained to do, but he made a bad situation. Let's listen to what she said.
He had a litany of options, non-deadly options at his disposal. And he didn't use them. You know why? Because he panicked. He abandoned all of his training.
So the prosecutor there is saying Officer Carrick abandoned all of his training. And how did the state respond?
Right. And to be clear, that was Prosecutor Adrian Harris. It's him and Postel are the two that are taking this case.
How did the defense respond?
The defense's response, exactly. Yeah, the defense's response was that the force was necessary because Jonathan Farrell was a threat to Carrick's life. That's a singular point they have tried to hit over and over again during this trial. That, you know, Carrick is responding to this late night 911 call. He sees someone looking like a suspect. That person advances toward them. The officers and Carrick, defense attorney George Lauren said, all of this happened in just a matter of seconds. Let's take a listen.
Does that make sense for this officer to reholster his firearm and go hands-on with somebody who has blown through a taser, who is obviously the suspect in a crime of violence, a breaking and entering felony charge, burglary, occupied by somebody, who has failed to heed commands, who's failed to stop? Does it make sense for an officer to reholster his firearm and say, hey, buddy, let's fight?
Now, the defense tried to paint Jonathan also as a burglar, and this caused a bit of a stir on the prosecution side. What they said was that that was never proven. There was no evidence to prove that he was trying to break in the home of the 911 caller. He had been in an accident and knocked on the door of a homeowner who called 911. But anyway, they said he was standing in a well-lit area of the house. He had on bright clothes, that he didn't try to break any windows, the back door, anything. So they said there was nothing in this to prove that he was a burglar. And the defense also said that when he walked down to, it's called Pool Road, that's near the home where he knocked on the door, they asserted that he was looking for more victims to homes to break in, I guess. And the prosecution said that there were no homes in that area. Also, he had no socks on at that time. His car had been wrecked, so he had no transportation. So they brought that out to show that this was not a case of someone trying to break in someone's home, someone being a burglar.
Okay. If I followed correctly, the defense spent quite a bit longer on its closing arguments today, so I'm wondering what other big points they brought out. Michael?
One of them was that they made a big show of which witnesses the prosecution did not call. So, for example, earlier in the trial, the defense brought a DNA expert from CMPD. That expert testified that she usually testifies for the prosecution, but in this case, it was for the state. And what she talked about was where DNA evidence was. There was some DNA evidence of Jonathan Farrell's on Carrick's shoes, on the lower part of his pants, and also on part of Carrick's gun. Now, the prosecution sort of countered with, well, these things, you know, first of all, when you're being shot repeatedly, your DNA is going to be in a lot of different places. And secondly, you know, their main point was that when Carrick first started shooting, he was farther away.
Yes, and they also made a case of Officer Little. He was the officer who was closest to Carrick when all of this happened, and he was the one who had the taser pointed at Jonathan Farrell when Jonathan Farrell approached the police. Now, they also said, well, they didn't call Officer Little either and told the jury that they didn't want you to hear from him. Well, the Teresa Postel, the prosecution side, said that that wasn't the case at all. It wasn't an issue of them not wanting the jury to hear from him. But here's what she had to say.
Why did the state not call Officer Little? And I apologize. There may be a few things that I don't even need to talk about that you guys have already figured out. But there are certain rules that we have to follow, like not talking about the law until we get the closing arguments. And like not calling witnesses that we know are not going to tell the truth. That's why we didn't call Officer Little.
And as you can hear, there was an objection from the defense when Attorney Postel said that he wasn't going to turn the truth. So there was an aside with the judge. And when she came back, she was allowed to answer it. And this time she said that he was not a credible witness, and that was why they did not call him.
Reporters Gwendolyn Glenn and Michael Tomczyk are in the studio with me. This is All Things Considered on 90.7 WFAE, and you're listening to special coverage of the Randall Carrick trial. Jury deliberations in that case got underway this afternoon. Now, the dash cam video was a very big part of this trial. What did both sides have to say about that video in their closing arguments today?
Well, during the trial itself, that was something that everybody anxiously awaited to see because it was not released prior to the trial getting underway. The defense played it in slow motion, and they talked about that you could see Jonathan Farrell charging the officers. They talked about the positions. They talked about that there were things that happened out of view of the dash cam. And they even said that, you know, when you're looking at a Super Bowl game, that cameras are from various angles, and that when a call is called into question, a play is called into question, that the referees look at all of these angles. So they tried to bring that up in terms of the dash cam as well. Now, on the other side, the prosecution said that in that dash cam, when they showed it, they said you could see that Jonathan Farrell was not pacing as the defense had said he was, that he was erratic, that he was slapping his legs. And they showed, they pointed out that you couldn't see any of that happening, that he was just slowly walking up to police. And also they pointed out there was no weapon in his hands at that time. So both of them used it to point out, to make their points today.
Now, outside the courtroom, since this case happened in 2013, race has been a big consideration, has received a lot of attention. Carrick, a white police officer, Jonathan Farrell, a young African-American man. How did race come up today in the courtroom during closing arguments?
The defense accused the prosecution of playing it up in this case, in fact. And what that came down to is Adrian Harris gave a statement, or he quoted Martin Luther King Jr., really not any statement particular to race, but just a Martin Luther King Jr. quote about how, you know, when some things seem obviously wrong or dumb, they are. And defense attorney George Loren, here is what he said about that.
And that statement Mr. Harris read to you about the great Dr. Martin Luther King was attempt to play the race card, and there's no business for race in this case, period. Absolutely none. They played the race card this morning. He told you in board hire, and Mr. Green said it better than I. All you folks, is this case about race? It absolutely is not. And you ought to be offended at the fact the state inserted the race card this morning.
One thing about this trial, race has been talked about a lot outside of the courtroom by people in the community, by on the media. We've said it, you know, when we've explained that Officer Carrick is white, Jonathan Farrell is an African-American man. After today's closing statements, I talked with the president of the NAACP, Corrine Mack, and she said that in her estimation, it is definitely about race. She said that she looks at it as Jonathan Farrell, a young African-American man's character being attacked here by the defense throughout this case. And she also pointed out that his size was brought up as well by the defense. Here he is, 6'4", 200 and something pounds, former football player, and that the defense at times would point out that Officer Carrick is 5'7", 100 and something pounds. And she said, here is that fear that this white man, and these are her words, this white man would always would fear this tall, big black man. So she talked about that and said for her, it is definitely a case of race.
And at the end of the day in the courtroom, the prosecution has been bringing it back around to this idea of excessive force. Prosecuting attorney Teresa Postel told the jurors they have two very important clues for determining what is reasonable in this case, and that's how the two other officers with Carrick reacted. Let's take a listen.
One of them deployed the taser. The other one, even after the taser didn't work, was going to go hands-on. Neither one of those other two officers ever even unholstered their firearm. What would a reasonable person do? Go hands-on.
Prosecuting attorney Teresa Postel from the closing arguments today at the Randall Carrick trial. As you're listening to special coverage here during All Things Considered on 90.7 WFAE, we'll take a look finally at what instructions the judge gave to the jury before they went in to begin deliberating this case this afternoon. They heard some 2 weeks of testimony. Gwendolyn, how did the judge instruct them?
Well, he instructed them to give a verdict of guilty or non-guilty on voluntary manslaughter. He told them that they can believe all or none of what the various witnesses had to say. And he said that also to remember that the state had to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Officer Carrick was guilty. He also explained very clearly what the law says about voluntary manslaughter. Let's listen.
A killing would be excused entirely on the ground of self-defense if, first, it appeared to the defendant, and the defendant believed it to be necessary to kill Jonathan Farrell in order to save the defendant from death or great bodily harm. And second, that the circumstances as they appeared to the defendant at the time were sufficient to create such a belief in the mind of a person of ordinary firmness. It is for you, the jury, to determine the reasonableness of the defendant's belief from the circumstances as they appeared to the defendant at the time. In making this determination, you should consider the circumstances as you find them to have existed from the evidence, including the size, age, and strength of the defendant as compared to that of the deceased, the fierceness of the assault, if any, upon the defendant, and whether or not the deceased had a weapon in his possession.
Judge Robert Irvin there in the Randall Carrick trial this afternoon instructing the jury before they began deliberations in the voluntary manslaughter case against CMPD officer Randall Carrick. Those deliberations began several hours ago, shortly after 2:30 this afternoon. And Michael Tomczyk, do we know if the jury is still at it at this time?
They are home for the day, so they'll be back deliberating again tomorrow morning.
WFAE reporters Michael Tomczyk and Gwendolyn Glenn are covering the Randall Carrick trial today. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.